Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of unobtainium. Greetings from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city in the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, designated driver of the airwaves, and moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophonous cavalcade of conversation. Across the country, time to button up, put on the mucklucks and earmuffs, bring in the brass monkey because he's in trouble if you don't. Winter, still a few days away, at least according to the calendar, but it's cold. It's cold out there, even here in the desert. We were pummeled this weekend by high winds. It grounded airplanes. It uprooted trees. It knocked out power. It's cold by our standards. I know millions of you are probably laughing at that statement since we got up into the 50s today, but our blood's pretty thin out here in the desert, so please be gentle with us. I always marvel at the weekend before Christmas, what it's like to drive anywhere. It's as if millions of people who have been shut-ins for the past 12 months suddenly emerge from their burrows, see the sunlight for the first time. Presumably, you know, they're squinting as they look up at the big, mysterious yellow ball in the sky, and then they try to drive cars so they can go to the mall and buy stuff. But they are completely mystified by these newfangled auto machines, and they seemingly have forgotten all those pesky rules of the road, such as what a red light means and what turn signals are for. It's a real adventure just kind of going to the 7-Eleven or walking out to the mailbox as the strange mole people swerve and sway all over the roads as if they're the only car in the world. I don't have to tell you. It's a jungle out there, at least for another couple of days, and then that's just in time for the drunken nitwits on New Year's Eve to be on the loose. So anyway, be careful out there, folks. This is my final program of 2016, so I wanted to go out with a bang, and I think that's what we have in store for you tonight. 2016 did not bring us a formal ultimate disclosure about the UFO mystery. Seems like every year someone, or maybe a bunch of someones, makes a prediction that this will be the year when the beans get spilled, when the truth finally comes out, when they admit what they already know. Well, it didn't happen. It didn't happen again. But 2016 was a remarkable year for the UFO mystery, the UFO story. Flying saucers became an issue in the presidential campaign. One of the candidates invited questions from journalists about UFOs and cover-ups and disclosure, and then it blew into an even bigger story when John Podesta's email was hacked and WikiLeaks spilled all that stuff out into the open. And lo and behold, there were UFO-related emails involving some high-level military folks and former intelligence people and our buddy, rock star Tom DeLonge. 5 years ago tonight, Tom made his first appearance on this program. And earlier this year, as you might recall, if you listened, he revealed on this program that he had some interesting irons in the fire, that he was in touch with some high-level people, big-name people, in and out of government about the UFO mystery. And a lot of you didn't believe it. A lot of folks said, why would anyone in positions of power talk to a rock star about this stuff? How can that be true? But surprise, surprise, it was true. The disclosure of DeLonge's and Podesta's emails was a gigantic story all over the world on multiple levels. But it certainly wasn't the only UFO headline of the year. And joining me in the second half of tonight's program is our friend Alejandro Rojas of Open Minds. He's one of the few journalists in the country who has a full-time job reporting on UFO cases and issues. So we will review the biggest UFO stories, incidents, cases of the year, including the Clinton disclosure talk, the Podesta email scandal, Tom DeLonge's venture, new witnesses has surfaced in the Bentwaters UFO case, and a lot more. Alejandro joins me 2 hours from now. First, though, a topic that I consider this to be sort of a benchmark or landmark endeavor. It's mind-bending, paradigm-smashing, world-shaking, but it's one that I've never addressed as a host. I've been the guest to talk about this, but I've never addressed a show specifically designed to talk about Skinwalker Ranch. We've mentioned Skinwalker Ranch in passing, when it would come up in connection with the work of some other guests, but I've never invited a guest onto the show to talk specifically about that property or its various mysteries. Tonight, that changes. You know, one reason I've avoided addressing it directly or inviting a guest to speak about Skinwalker Ranch is because some of you know, I co-wrote a book about the ranch years ago, and that book sort of helped set off the stampede that is still unfolding today. An army of UFO hunters and monster hunters, trespassers, drunks, vandals, curiosity hounds have flooded onto that property in Utah. They've trespassed illegally. They've vandalized the place and stolen stuff. They get drunk. They toss beer cans around. They have little UFO parties. It's been a mess. And a lot of that's clearly my fault. So I didn't want to add to the misery for the ranch managers and the caretakers out there by doing more about it. Plus, it seemed like it would be kind of self-serving to highlight a book that I had wrote on this program, so I sidestepped that as a show topic. But things have changed somewhat dramatically. In fact, I received information just a few hours ago while preparing for this program tonight that have reinforced my decision to go ahead and focus on the ranch and the surrounding area. For those unfamiliar with the subject, the property in question is in northeastern Utah near Fort Duchesne, up near Roosevelt and Vernal. It's the Uinta Basin. It's been a hot spot for UFOs and other so-called paranormal events for as long as humans have lived there. The basin was the focus of a 1970s book about UFO sightings in the basin, but this mystery goes far beyond just UFOs. And this one particular property, this ranch property, has been an epicenter of activity that includes orbs, flying saucers, strange beasts, bulletproof wolves, Bigfoot-type creatures, invisible entities, poltergeist-type events, abductions, men in black, animal mutilations, crop circles, you name it. It's been there. This name, Skinwalker, was publicized by us after we heard it, a name that was assigned to this property by the Utes. They said, this property should be off limits because it's in the path of the Skinwalker. This tribe, the Utes, surrounds. They have property all around this ranch. It's like an island in the middle of Ute reservation land. And in Native American lore, a skinwalker is a shapeshifter, something that can change shapes. It's sort of an umbrella term that the Utes have given to sort of explain all the strange stuff that happens in this property. Well, 20 years ago this year, billionaire Robert Bigelow bought the ranch because there had been a flurry of activity there that came to his attention. He put his team of scientists onto the property, kind of sealed it off, and over a seven-year period, they studied the ranch. They had their own experiences. They documented an array of really weird events, and then, of course, myth and lore grew up around the place once I helped publicize it, and the phenomena seemed to go underground at the ranch. As the scientists chased it, it went underground. The paradigm sort of shifted. Well, tonight I'm here to tell you that it's back. The ranch has, in the words of one insider, come alive again. As I reported earlier this year, Bob Bigelow sold the ranch back in April, and a new group is now on the property. They're privately funded. They know what they're doing. They're ready to restart this study. And for the past few months, the principals have been working quietly to get things in place, to get legal permission to permanently vacate the road that leads through the property. They accomplished that a couple of weeks ago. And they want to establish a new security perimeter. They've put high-tech cameras that ring the property. They got new security personnel, ex-military guys. They now have implemented a drone surveillance program, not only as part of the security measure to keep people out, but also to take pictures and video of what's inside the ranch. Well, one of these people who asked to remain anonymous, who's involved with the new ownership, shared some images with me today, and they are pretty amazing. And I don't own them. I was asked not to release them, but I can tell you I've seen them. They are daylight photos and videos. They show an array of unidentified craft. You remember there was back in the 90s in Salida, Colorado, there was a UFO that was photographed. One of these looks exactly like that one. In another photo, there's a glowing orange object, again, broad daylight photo right over the property. And I'm hopeful that we're going to learn a lot more about what's going on there. And as I hear new stuff, I'll share it with you as much as I can. In the meantime, though, one of the most intrepid researchers who's been studying the Uinta Basin for years is my first guest tonight. Her name is Erica Lukes. She's highly regarded in this field. She's a former MUFON director for the state of Utah. She's been to the basin. She's developed a network of firsthand witnesses and sources, and she will join us in a few minutes to tell us what she's learned, and I can't wait to hear it. Our webmaster, Greg Bishop, and I have put together our usual assortment of items and oddities culled from news media around the world. We call it Naps News, and you can find it on the Coast to Coast website. You go there and click on the news icon, and it'll be there. And we have a couple of items related to our first subject tonight. There's an interactive map of the Skinwalker Ranch, if you've ever wondered what it looks like. This was put together by the Uinta Standard newspaper, which has been reporting on the property some activity this year. Also, a list of 10 anomalies that have been reported on the ranch over the years. I think most of them were first mentioned in our book that I spoke of a little bit earlier. Also in Naps News, the biggest space stories of 2016. Some analysis on how NORAD might be secretly studying UFOs, kind of contrary to what the military has told the public since 1969. And a piece there about the Fatima miracle, whether that was UFO related or something else. Those stories and more under Naps News. While you're on the website, check out and become a Coast Insider. It costs pennies a day. It gives you access to like a vast treasure trove of previous programs. You can listen on any device, anytime you want, as many times as you want. And you can also see while you're there how to subscribe to George Norrie's TV program called Beyond Belief. And now let's assume the position. The dog and the cat had already been in the house. It's too cold for them outside. Put on a pot of Joe. Shimmy into those warm flannel jammies and slippers, toss a log on the fire, bolt the door, turn down the light, and turn up the radio, because we're about ready to rumble. In a moment, Erica Lukes and the Skinwalker Ranch. I'm George Knapp, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Erica Lukes' passion for UFOs dates back to her childhood. She had a series of personal sightings in 2013 that led her to join MUFON. She became the Utah State Director for MUFON, was an associate producer of the MUFON communications team, was their Volunteer of the Year, 2 years running in 14 and 15, and now serves as Communications Director for the International Association of UAP Researchers. She has investigated Skinwalker Ranch and the surrounding areas for years and developed her own sources, as I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, and she hosts a program called UFO Classified on KCOR. Welcome to the program, amazingly, for the first time, Erica Lukes. Hi, Erica.
It is so fantastic to be here with you tonight. Thank you for having me.
So let's start with a little bit about your background. You were interested as a child, but you didn't see anything until just a few years ago. Is that right?
You know what? That is exactly right. I mean, I always had a fascination for the unknown. And I remember being in the school library back in grade school and picking up a book on UFOs, and something just struck me. And it was from that moment forward that I began to look into Bigfoot, into alien abductions, into ghosts and the paranormal. And I was raised by a mother who was she's an incredibly brilliant woman, but she raised me to have an open mind, but to be critical in my thinking and to always ask questions. And so in my 20s, I lived in a very haunted house that was documented and was actually in the media, and it was an interesting thing. And then from there, I had a series of sightings that you were referring to in 2013, and that was pretty mind-blowing for me, most of all because I live 80 miles away from Dugway Proving Ground, and I lived when I was viewing these objects, as many others did in the Utah Valley, Salt Lake Valley. They were in the flight corridor for the International Airport. So to me, it was not only seeing this, but why are they in airspace? What, you know, why are they so close to this top secret military installation? There were so many questions, and I wanted to know the answers. So that set me on my path.
What is the International Association for UAP Researchers?
So this is a new organization, and we really feel that this is going to be quite groundbreaking. Ted Rowe, who is the executive director of NARCAP, another incredibly important organization that studies aviation safety with regard to UAP sightings. He has started a new organization to really address the scientific and academic community. And we will be working with people from all over the world, and we'll have a peer-reviewed journal and an active international college of experts. And we will work with other organizations like UFO Data to help them, you know, obtain funding and do promote research, because truly we are, I believe, seeing the end of ufology, and it's imperative that we engage this subject in a different manner, and we have to be much more aggressive in our approach, and I believe we are going to do this.
The end of ufology meaning as a standalone entity or subject, meaning it other disciplines have to be part of the study?
You know what, I believe that ufology, unfortunately, is become kind of a cottage industry, and we're not really addressing the issues. We are looking for the Holy Grail, and I think we see this a lot, especially in the United States, with organizations. We're waiting for that one case, you know, where the alien lands on the White House lawn, and as a result of that, we're missing key elements. We're not analyzing the data. We're not putting together the bigger picture, because there is a bigger picture here. We're not progressive in our approach, and we're not viewing this as a tactical problem. And we spend an awful lot of time, as you know, arguing about whether the fact this is really happening. Well, we know it is. We know that we're experiencing something that is truly anomalous, and we need to move forward and take a progressive approach and really engage this topic.
You know, I know in the time that I've been involved in the topic, it's changed so much. You know, the nuts and bolts saucer stuff, which is sort of the prevailing paradigm when I started, has changed. And it's changed in part exactly what you're saying, is that the stodgy approach to, I just want to study flying saucers coming here from other planets, does not work. It doesn't explain the mystery. It doesn't explain associated mysteries, which is sort of how the study of the Skinwalker Ranch kind of changed my worldview on everything. And maybe that's what attracted you to it as well.
You know, I think so, and I think it's been an interesting process, especially with me, to be involved with MUFON and to see there are lots of people that come into this, and we all do. We're all guilty of this, coming into this with bias. And if we're going to truly study this, we need to set our bias aside, and we need to really look at this from a different perspective. I mean, we can't, if there is an intelligence interacting with us, which we know that there is, why would they leave trace evidence? Why, you know, there's so many questions that I ask myself and many others every day. I mean, we need to stop looking for specific things, and we need to look at what we have, and then we need to obtain funding, and we need to do good field research studies. That's where we need to go.
Do you know when you started focusing some of your attention and investigations on the Uinta Basin?
Since I am in Utah, and becoming Utah State Director, that was when I began to really grab a hold of what was taking place in the Uinta Basin and in the Salt Lake City area specifically. You know, you've got the Dugway Hill Air Force Base. You have all of these different things here, and Utah is truly one of those places where there is a lot of strange activity. And a lot of the times, except for Skinwalker, thanks to you and Colm Kelleher, a lot of times what happens here goes unnoticed. And so when I took over as Utah State Director, there was the MUFON chapter was pretty much null and void, because Elaine Douglas had left MUFON with a bang, and that the chapter, she passed away, but the chapter was in disarray. So I really worked hard at getting this chapter established again and getting people comfortable. And so they would, you know, give me sightings reports, and I established connections all over Utah to do this, and did a lot of really great work with my team. It's been an amazing process, the whole thing.
So you've been there? Have you personally been to the basin? I know you have sources. Yes. and people on the ground. Yes?
Yes.
Have you tried to go on to the ranch?
You know, we were on the periphery of the ranch, and I know that it was, and I've talked to you before, and you've always been so gracious to talk to me, and you had mentioned how disrespectful people are for private property, which is absolutely shocking to me. And so we just observed that, and we were there with some people that I was working with, and I still work with. In fact, I talked to them today. And they have lived there their whole lives and know everybody there. Including.
I'll tell you what, Erica, we're gonna hear that story after this break, how you have a multi-generational view of the ranch and the basin, and we're going to get into that in a moment. We're talking with Erica Lukes about the Uinta Basin, Skinwalker Ranch, and how the idea that the UFO mystery has expanded into a much larger sort of paradigm involving paranormal phenomena that you might not necessarily associate with flying saucers. And what's going on there in Utah is a perfect example of it. When we come back, we'll get into the stories that she has heard from eyewitnesses on the ground. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. Erica Lukes, can you give me sort of a broad overview, broad strokes about the kinds of paranormal or unknown phenomena that you have identified or investigated in connection with the Uinta Basin?
So in the Uinta Basin, there are, we've got it's a menagerie of all sorts of things. So you've got typically the balls of light that are seen above ground, above the ridge tops. You see structured craft, creatures, disincarnate voices. You hear reports of machinery underground. So there is a paranormal activity. So you've got people that are in homes that are having things that are mysteriously misplaced, and then in another location they're experiencing strange occurrences with their electronics and things. So you've got everything in one place, and it's not just specific to Skinwalker Ranch. This has truly been taking place throughout the Uinta Basin for 50 plus years.
And what do you think it is? Is there something about that location? I mean, I'm sure you have some theories proving it's one thing. What do you think it is about that place? Or is it like that everywhere if you look hard enough?
I think that is a great question. And I think what I'm trying to do and many others are trying to do, we're trying to find commonalities. So what makes this location similar to the Brown Mountain location or places like Min Min or Heshtal in Norway? I mean, there are places that you see all over the world, or Yakima is another great example, and you mentioned that in Hunt for the Skinwalker, where you see all types of phenomena in one place. So when you're looking at that, you have to ask yourself, you have to look at, you know, what do we have here? Do we have specific mineral or rare earth content? Are there gravitational anomalies? Is there a Native American reservation? Is there a military installation? And it's very interesting when you start kind of putting the pieces together and making the connections. And that's when I was working with MUFON, I started a project called Project Orange, and we were specifically going through data and finding sightings clusters and then identifying the commonalities. And so it's curious, but I truly believe we can find things. And I think the Uinta Basin is a great example for this, because there are so many, we've got a lot of energy resources up there. We've got a lot of mines. We've got a lot of the Native American reservations. We've got some military. It's everything. And so when you just break that down, we've just got to kind of peel back the layers and see why this location is unique and why are there other locations all over the world that are hosting the same types of phenomenon.
You know, when I've made public presentations a few times over the years about the ranch and the basin, and we'll tell people about the range of different weird stuff that happens, and some of them will just kind of roll their eyes. How can that be? It doesn't make any sense. Why would it be in that area? And yet, it's hard to find somebody in that basin who lives there who hasn't had an experience or a sighting, or somebody in their family has had a sighting. And I don't know if you've had the same experience on the ground there or not, but that's been mine.
You know, it is absolutely. I mean, people there, that it is a common thing for them. In fact, one of the witnesses that I work with, and I was mentioning earlier, I was talking to today, he's lived there his whole life, as has his family. And they, I mean, it's one of those things, you know, you're out there, you see it, and you don't necessarily talk about it. It's just you kind of turn the other way. And I think that's how a lot of the cattle ranchers are in that area, because nobody knows what to do with this. I mean, who do you talk to? Where do you go for help?
Yeah, you worry about ridicule. You're not out there as a UFO investigator. You're raising cattle, so you're not carrying your investigative tools. You don't have a video camera with you necessarily to document it. That's not what your primary function is. You mentioned this three-generation cattle rancher. Can you tell us a little bit more about what they've seen over the years?
So I have a couple different multi-generational people that I've been working with, families. One specific person that is a cattle rancher has lost a lot of livestock, and including when he was younger, a family pet due to the strange mutilations. And then you've got the anomalous light phenomena that is oftentimes seen, very similar to the Skinwalker area. In fact, his property is close to Skinwalker, and so it's the same types of things. And they're very, very reserved people. And again, this is so out of their box, and they don't know who to talk to about it. And they don't really want to bring attention to this, specifically because if you've got a cattle and you're losing livestock, what is the insurance company going to say? You're losing a lot of money.
I know that the rancher, we call him Tom Gorman. His name has been publicized by other people. The rancher at the ranch in particular that we're talking about at the time, he at first thought it might be the government trying to chase him off his property. And there was, in fact, some government interest both then and now. But I don't think it was the government that's responsible for this array of stuff that's been going on, because it's been going on for decades. You know, it's not some recent phenomena. The idea that there might be underground bases or the underground machinery, so you've heard that from multiple people.
Yes. Yes, and it's not just in this location. I mean, we've heard this back in Missouri, where you have a lot of, you know, the Marley Woods. You've got a lot of different places back there that have repeated occurrences of the same types of phenomena. And so that is a very common thing. And now, for me, it is my job to try to get different researchers together and to pool the data and to make the connections. But as you know, it's incredibly difficult because people don't want to come forward with that. They're reticent, but they don't feel comfortable. They don't know what will happen. And it's very vital that we create a cohesive community.
Do you have people that will call you if there's a mutilation, for example? And how can you say how recently there have been any mutilations in the basin?
You know, unfortunately, I don't get a lot of calls with mutilations, and I think that it is probably few and far between when somebody would really reach out to somebody. I mean, I have a great case report, but that was back in 2014 from the Daggett County Sheriff's Department, when there were mutilations on a property. And interestingly enough, with this case, there was a massive UFO sighting over Salt Lake Valley and then over in Colorado. But it's hard. It's hard to establish rapport with people. It's hard to gain their trust, and it's hard to get there. And as you know, when you're dealing with cattle mutilations, you need to be on the scene within hours to really get in there.
The ranchers who have experienced this, either seen the flying orbs or other kinds of craft, or have had a mutilation, do they have theories about it? Do they share with you what they think it is?
You know, they don't. It is so completely out of their paradigm. I don't think they know what to think about it. It's just like when you were dealing with the Shermans. They don't know how to deal with this, but they know it is nothing that can be explained, and it's frightening to people. And so it is such a hard thing. How do you help these people? How do you create a supportive community? I don't know. I mean, you've been doing this for so long, and you've seen the heartache that has taken place in that area. and the loss of money due to the mutilations. And it's just it's a tragic thing. And I truly hope that we can figure this out and create a support system.
Do you have any creature sightings?
We do have creature sightings. Yes, we do. In fact, that's always a complete trip up there. We have sightings of 8-foot-tall creatures with the glowing red eyes, typical kind of skinwalker sightings reports. You get Bigfoot creatures that are seen in the area. So it's the same type of thing. We also have reports. I talked to Ryan Burns, who lives up near there, and you will get animals. You'll see animals that have test tubes hanging off of them as they're walking through properties. So you get all sorts of things. And then you get the wolf sightings. It's mind-blowing, as you know.
Have you made any inroads with the tribe? It was a tough nut to crack for the NIDS guys, I know, trying to get the tribe to open up and talk about things that they have seen. That's where we got the name for the Skinwalker Ridge, and I just didn't know if you had any luck that we didn't.
You know what? I keep working on that, and I've made a few inroads, and like you say, that's it's a tough thing to do, and I don't blame anybody for being reticent to talk about this, because there's so many people in this field that don't take it seriously and don't hold people's anonymity with regard to the witness accounts. You know, we need to take this very seriously. And when you're dealing with people's beliefs and their heritage, it's a very different thing. But every day I'm making connections and I'm acquiring case reports of skinwalker sightings and talking to, I'm very fortunate to know that one of the foremost Native American historians in the world. And so I've been meeting with him and learning about all of the Native American lore. And it's been a truly amazing process for me.
You mentioned about Ryan Burns. There's also a guy named Ryan Skinner and then Ryan Layton, at least three Ryans I know of who've been on the ground investigating strange activity there and really have devoted a lot of time to it and are pretty serious. You also have weekend warriors who come in and, they'll go up to the ranch. Sometimes they'll trespass on the property and I think they make up stuff. It's like a Rorschach test or something. They see what they want to see or they just make it up. And then suddenly they're online and they become weekend experts on the whole thing. And I think the locals, I think they resent it. You know, I think,
I don't blame them.
In terms of, do you have a network of other researchers who are there on the ground who will call you up if something weird happens?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, and that has been a hard thing. I've established networks of people all over the world, but I will tell you, in this area, it has been incredibly difficult. But Dave Rosenfeld, Ryan Burns, they have been incredible. I have a family that I've been working with, and they will give me reports, and then we'll do some investigations. And I'm also reaching out to law enforcement and different witnesses, and it's just you just have to get people comfortable, and you have to assure people that you're not there to exploit what's happening there. This is sensitive, and I also think you've brought up so many times the great points of these weekend warriors that come in there, and they truly don't understand what they're dealing with, and it, in a lot of cases, what takes place up there isn't good. And unless you have it together, you truly shouldn't be going up there and messing around with what's taking place.
Have you heard any stories about the phenomena following people, attaching itself?
That is always a common concern, and it does. I think that if you are a person that has a weak constitution, that isn't necessarily, and I hate to even go there, but you have to be a strong and a good person, because you don't know what you're dealing with. And when you come into contact with some of these negative energies, a lot of times they can and they will attach themselves to you. And I think that's very common in the paranormal realm, and it can cause a lot of problems in your life. So when I had sightings reports when I was MUFON state director, and we knew that there was something pretty malevolent taking place. I was very hesitant to send in my team because I wasn't sure if they would be truly prepared for what they would encounter. And that's something you have to look at when you're going into places like this.
Malevolent? How? What were the indications that whatever it was? I've been there a lot of times, and I think it's benign at best or indifferent at best, but it can be pretty mean. And some people really get messed up by the experience.
And that's the thing. I mean, you hear different sides to the story, and some people will say that they feel almost comforted by what's there, like it's keeping a watch over them. But then you get reports from, we had a case that was submitted to us, and it was this person that was so terrified. I mean, he had stockpiled arms and had many guard dogs around him, and he was obviously terrorized, but I don't know if this is, you also have to look at the individual and what's going on in their lives at the time. Is there something negative that's taking place in their environment that's causing a negative energy or entity to come into their space? I mean, there's so many different ways to approach this, and you have to step back, and my main priority is to keep the people that I'm with safe. And I think we truly don't know what's taking place. And you saw that probably a lot on the ranch and dealing with the experiences of Colm and others at the, you know, at Skinwalker.
Junior Hicks is the name of somebody, one of the first people I met there when the NIDS guys were on the property. It's anybody who lives in the basin would know Junior Hicks. He was a science teacher. And he got to know generations of kids, and as they grew up, when they would see strange stuff, they'd tell him about it, and he's accumulated thousands and thousands of cases. I think 400 or so of his best cases became the book, the Utah UFO Display, and he was very helpful to us in the early going. Have you worked with Junior Hicks?
I have never had the pleasure of meeting him, and I've been trying to do that because he is such a valuable resource. I did have the pleasure of speaking with Frank Salisbury on different occasions, and I'm sad that he has passed, but what a brilliant man. And he was, for people that don't know who Dr. Frank Salisbury was, he was the head of the Department of Plant Physiology for Utah State University, and he was also a leading scientist who worked with the Atomic Energy Commission, and he was also a devout Mormon. And for him to go into this and to research this, it really pushed his boundaries with regard to religion and his place in all of this, our place in all of this. But he did absolutely feel that there was an intelligence that perhaps could be from outer space, but it was in this isolated region of Utah, and he felt that there was a base for UFOs, and they were putting on a show, and that's where the name the Utah UFO Display came from. And his book is a tremendous resource.
Yeah, we did not have access to it until after the Skinwalker book came out. But I guess after he read our account, his book focused on UFOs as flying saucers from other planets, and then he did an updated version. And if people haven't seen it, it's a great book, the Utah UFO Display, and it. I think in the updated version, it sort of incorporated some of the more exotic possibilities that were not part of the paradigm when he was first writing about it. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, I want to address this idea about a display, because it seems like a lot of what has happened in that basin and in other UFO cases is that the entity or intelligence wants to be seen. It puts on a display or a performance. What kind of agenda you think might be going on there? We'll expand the conversation into include some other UFO cases that you've been investigating. And then at the bottom of the next hour, we'll open up the phone lines, take some calls, questions, and comments for folks who want to talk about the basin or the Skinwalker Ranch or other cases that my guest Erica Lukes has explored. So we're going to take a break. The Beatles, who really liked all that Motown sound, covered Smokey Robinson song, You Really Gotta Hold On Me. We'll be back with Erica Lukes more in just a moment.